Privacy Podcast from the Sagamore Institute and NCF Indiana. I'm your host, Holly Mumford. Our topic today is relational generosity, and I've got Dr. Amy Sherman from the Sagamore Institute with me to talk about this. And we'll also be hearing from a volunteer from an Indianapolis-based ministry to single mums and their children called Heart Change. To get us launched, Amy and I want to tell you about a scene from a novel we've both enjoyed called Plainsong by Kent Herif. The scene does a great job capturing the essence of relational generosity. Amy, can you sum it up for us?
Yeah, one of the main characters in Plainsong is this compassionate and spunky high school teacher named Maggie Jones. And this student of hers named Victoria has gotten pregnant and been kicked out of her home. And in this particular scene, Maggie is visiting two brothers at their home on a small cattle ranch on the outskirts of the town. And Maggie's known these two brothers, Harold and Raymond, her whole life. And so she goes to them and she tells them that she knows about a girl who's in trouble. And Harold immediately asks if the girl needs money. And Maggie proceeds to tell them that no, what she needs actually is a place to stay. And then she just completely dumbfounds these two old bachelors by suggesting that they take Victoria in. And I just love how Maggie goes on in the scene to describe why they should do this. And here's the excerpt. She says, "Oh, I know it sounds crazy," Maggie said. "I suppose it is crazy. I don't know. I don't even care. But that girl needs somebody, and I'm ready to take desperate measures. She needs a home for these months. And you," she smiled at them, "you solitary bastards need somebody too. Somebody or something besides an old red cow to care about and worry over. It's too lonesome out here. Well, look at you. You're going to die someday without ever having had enough trouble in your life. Not of the right kind, anyway. This is your chance." I remember reading those lines about dying without ever having had the right kind of trouble in life and thinking, yeah, that is where relational generosity starts. It's being willing to sort of take in the right kind of trouble into your life.
Yeah, that's a great phrase. We talked in the prior podcast about how relational generosity is at the heart of biblical generosity. Even though many people, including Christians, tend to think first of financial generosity. In fact, in that scene in the novel, Harold admits to Maggie that money would have been a lot easier than offering the teenager a home. And I think a lot of us can relate to that. Sometimes it feels easier to write a check than to inconvenience ourselves in caring for another person.
Yeah, and I hate to admit it, but that's certainly often true for me.
So what's so lovely in the book is how a rich friendship develops over the time between these two crusty old bachelors and this teenage girl. Each of them is profoundly affected, and each of them grows and matures in ways that they didn't expect.
And each of them ends up experiencing a great deal of, I think, mostly unexpected joy.
Then let's not say too much more about that book so we don't spoil it for our listeners. Amy, relational generosity can take on a wide variety of expressions. Mm-hmm. These are not always as dramatic as inviting a homeless teenager to live with you. Relational generosity can look like a youth inviting a new student at the school to sit at her lunch table, for example. It can look like one co-worker choosing to give a gentle answer to an upset or impatient colleague, or a tired dad agreeing to play soccer with his son when he gets home from work instead of just plopping down on the couch to watch TV. Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of common thread among the different activities that we call relational generosity?
Yeah, I think there is. It strikes me that relational generosity is sort of about this messy entanglement of caring for other people. It's often more difficult than giving money, but it can be more rewarding.
And that's the thing, isn't it? In our busy, already full lives, we tend to shy away from people we label as needy. We don't want to get into those messy entanglements.
Yep. Thanks for pointing out all my sins today, Holly.
Mine too.
Yeah, there's a level of mercy and sacrifice, I think, at the heart of relational generosity. At least when we understand it as an intentional investment in these messy entanglements, you know, when we're choosing to take the right kind of trouble into our lives. That's really the heart of the matter. Relational generosity isn't some sort of easy or abstract or random act of kindness.
That's too bad, because that's a lot more convenient
for
us.
Yeah, but it's this intentional thing. And that's because, like we said last time, true biblical generosity is rooted in God's character, and God doesn't do random acts of kindness. God is this God of really intentional and persistent love. It's a love that's talked about with the Hebrew word hesed. In the scriptures, that's that biblical word that often gives English translators a lot of difficulty, because there's in the Hebrew there's sort of so many dimensions of meaning packed into that one little word, and in our Bibles, hesed is often translated loving kindness or covenant faithfulness, and you know, I think for our purposes today in the teaching is that hesed really, I think, gets at the crux. It's a description of God's relational generosity towards us.
Say more about that.
Well, this notion of God's hesed, it appears in the Old Testament over 60 times, and the word is only ever used in these relational contexts. It's only used in cases where there's some kind of sort of recognized tie between the parties that are being talked about. So it's not a synonym for just sort of a generalized being nice to people or a generalized kindness. There's intentionality with hesed. There's persistence and steadfastness. And there's mercy in hesed, because it's a kind of love that often is one way. In other words, it's this love that God is showing to us, this generosity that he's showing to us, but that we're not necessarily always returning back to him in kind.
Right, and that's really worth lingering on. The more we recognize the nature of God's incredible relational generosity towards us, the more empowered we are to demonstrate it towards others.
Yeah, I think that with these messy entanglements, you know, we're a lot quicker to label other people as needy than we are to recognize that we are needy. But we are needy, and in response to our neediness, God is generous towards us. He runs towards us, not away from us. He moves into the messy entanglement of intentional compassion with us. He shows us this persevering, merciful kindness. And the more that we meditate on how much relational generosity we've received from God, I think the better we'll be able to give it to other people.
So the key is for us to focus on the mercy God has shown us. We consider the ways that he is faithful to keep on giving himself, even when we don't actually deserve it or don't return his love and kind. And then we're more open to treating other people with that kind of relational generosity.
Yeah, and I think when we try to keep that as our focus, it not only helps us be generous, but it helps us have the right humility in these relationships with so-called needy people, because now we're coming into that relationship recognizing that, you know, we're really not so different from that other person, because we also are needy.
Now, Amy, I know that you've met some women in Indianapolis who really demonstrate powerfully in their lives this whole concept of relational generosity.
Yeah, I've been so touched by their witness and their example. They're women who are involved in a ministry in India that I just love called Heart Change. It was started about 10 years ago. It's a 100% volunteer-run ministry. And Heart Change is basically about trying to bring Christ's love to women and children who are in generational poverty, living in inner-city Indianapolis.
And Heart Change volunteers gather with these women and their kids at the campus of the Oaks Academy's middle school near the Brookside neighborhood on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. They run a number of programs, but at the center is an initiative called Mothers University. This is a biblically based life and parenting skills course. While the mothers learn about the love of Jesus and about the Bible's wisdom for life, their children enjoy a wonderfully thoughtful preschool program overseen by Anne Ost. Amy recently visited the Heart Change Ministry and chatted with them.
As you can tell, there's always a lot of energy and noise when you're dealing with preschoolers. I'm here, and Anne's got her team of helpers divided, overseeing kids of different age groups here in the school classrooms. And Anne's had a great deal of experience with kids, having been a teacher and a special education teacher for many years. But she not only enjoys the children, she loves getting to know their moms and befriending them. And I spoke with Anne about this whole concept of relational generosity and about how her serving at Heart Change has stretched her in this arena.
The Lord is moving my heart in lots of different directions to be more generous at all levels, in all areas. I think the deepest peace that the Lord has revealed of my heart is being generous in sharing love, as of course Jesus did to all of us. No parameters, nobody left out. I have I've realized throughout my life I have chosen who I love, and I've always been what I would say very nice to everybody else. But there is most definitely, is still definitely a difference between being nice, even kind, and willing to love. And it has only opened my eyes. I think the only way that God could open my eyes to this was by the rude awakening of jumping into Heart Change.
Anne told me that by moving towards women who come from a different walk of life, she's been growing in learning the discipline of Hesed love, and also in seeing her own brokenness.
The process has brought me to a deeper sense of Christ's love for me, and a deeper awareness of my own need for him and love for him because of what he's done for me. So I think where God has transformed me and is continuing, I mean, boy, it's going to be a lifetime. Good thing I'm 60, because it's going to be at least 25, 30 more years. But the transformation of the love is connected to the awareness that he gives me of my own brokenness, which leads me to the awareness of ultimately who I am. Then I can more clearly see who he is and what he's done, and that's where the source of the love comes. And so the love always starts with him, and then it flows out. It flows out to whoever I'm with.
An awareness of mutual need and mutual brokenness is critical in walking in genuine relational generosity. Otherwise, we can end up feeling superior to the person that we're seeking to serve. But when we've taken the time to soak in our need of God and his gracious response to us, we can be ever more authentic in these so-called helping relationships, even to the point where the division between being the so-called helper and the so-called helpee sort of falls down. In fact, Anne told me a great story of how this process unfolded for her through one of the relationships she's had with a Heart Change family. One day, Anne and this particular mom and her children were at an appointment that the mother had, and Anne was babysitting the children in the office reception area. She'd brought a whole bag of tricks with her to keep the kids entertained, but it kind of ran out after about 45 minutes, and then the kids really started getting squirrely. And poor Anne was really embarrassed by their behavior and got some dirty looks from the receptionist.
So, yes, I was totally embarrassed at my inability to control the children. As we walked out together, I turned one last time to the receptionist and apologized, and then turned around to walk out with Candy and her kids. And about the time we got to the door, the receptionist said in a louder voice, "Oh, don't worry about it. I know how it is. Grandparents have a hard time sometimes dealing with the kids." And I quickly turned around and looked at her and said, "They are not my grandchildren." Then Candy and I walked through the door. Candy looked at me and said, "Miss Anne, the kids call you Grandma sometimes."
As you can imagine, that was a very painful moment for Anne. As soon as those words left her mouth, she wished she could take them back. The experience, though, led to a big step forward in their relationship.
So as Candy and I get into the car, I'm still feeling totally guilty, devastated, shaky. Candy looks at me, and for the first time ever, she says, "Miss Anne, when I am frustrated or worried or angry, you tell me to pray." And I look over at her and I smile and I ask her if she would pray for me, which she had never done before. At that point, after she prays and I ask for forgiveness and we talk about it through a few tears, our relationship was changed forever. My vulnerability and brokenness being brought out into the open had allowed her to take a giant step forward in her confidence, in her ability to pray, to serve, and to love as a friend. From that point on, I realized that I was not called on to be the fixer of Candy's problems, nor just to be her mentor. But we were called to be friends, to walk together, I serving and helping her, and she serving and helping me in friendship.
It's fascinating how Anne's experience with Candy mirrors what happens in the novel Plainsong between the teenager Victoria and the two older brothers, mm-hmm. Harold and Raymond. Initially, it looks like the generosity is all on one side.
Right.
The two brothers offering sacrificial hospitality to Victoria in her great need. But as the story unfolds, the relationship between the McPherson brothers and Victoria evolves. Victoria's presence, her contributions to the household, the things she has to teach Harold and Raymond, all these bring about a truly mutual friendship among these somewhat oddly matched housemates.
Right. And, you know, and I think that's how it can be when our investments of relational generosity are rooted in the humility that comes from seeing ourselves as needy recipients of God's incredible and sacrificial chesed love towards us.
Thank you, Amy. That's all for this edition of the Live Generously podcast. Be sure to tune in next month when we take up the topic of generosity and God's mission in the world. Until then, I'm your host, Holly Mumford. Thanks for being with us today.